Well, nice to be in your part of the woods. Every time I travel, I have to thank two brothers for my journey. You probably know who I'm talking about. The Wright brothers. They help us get places fast. I actually just finished a biography about the Wright brothers a few months ago, and I wasn't aware, I don't know if you are, of how much skepticism surrounded flight at that time. There had been so many mishaps and flops that the communities, the press, were just tired of these efforts to get off the ground, and they had finally resolved themselves. Man was not meant to fly. We weren't born with wings. This is stupid. Even if we could get a little plane off the ground, how are we going to ever do anything useful with it? But the Wrights were just good guys. You read this biography, they were humble, they were hardworking, they were innovative. They had a bicycle shop in Ohio. They were inventive. They took their spare money and their spare time, and they began to experiment and test out ideas. And the chronology of their experiments coincides somewhat with Mary Baker Eddy's life and work. You know, she was born in 1821, died in 1910. She was a pathfinder in a different way. And what I saw as I was reading the biography was that the Wrights were convinced that there was a principle of flight that could be understood and then tapped and made useful. They proved to be right, actually, and they had to endure quite a bit of criticism at different times and hardship. Mary Baker Eddy was convinced that there was a principle of healing underlying Jesus' healing practice that could be understood and practiced today. It was a timeless principle, like the principle of flight, and she dedicated her life to understanding it, putting into practice, writing about it, teaching it, publishing it. Now, if you compare the amount of opposition that the Wrights faced and the amount of opposition that a woman in the 19th century faced for these revolutionary ideas at that time, there's no comparison, actually. Mary Baker Eddy had to endure ridicule, threats to her life, hardship, financial instability. But she was convinced that this principle of healing belonged to the world. It was a scientific principle, and it could be of great benefit. She said, the motive of my earliest labors has never changed. It was to alleviate the suffering of humanity. And she knew what suffering was about because she dealt with a lot of chronic illness in her life. But she had the conviction that biblical healing could be understood. It helped her a great deal, and she was able to help many others. So tonight's talk is really a look at the infinite possibilities of spiritual healing when we understand the principle behind healing. And I want to begin to just ask each of you to reflect on a time in your lives when you overcame some limitation. You know, somebody said you couldn't do something. You weren't smart enough. You weren't fast enough. You weren't strong enough. And you were able to challenge that limitation. Can you think about just something in your life that comes to mind? You know, for all of us, from the time we were little to now, we've probably faced a lot of naysaying, maybe even our own naysaying, can't do that. But I believe that every time we effectively challenge a limitation, we open a door to the infinite. You know, the word infinite means not limited, not finite, not confined. One of the dictionary definitions is unlimited in time, space, and qualities. Infinite. I found it's a tremendously helpful word when it comes to healing, expanding our sense of the infinite. There's one word that to me defines infinite best, and you won't find it in most dictionaries. The word God. If we're going to conceive of God, think about God, we have to think of God as infinite, unlimited. And I believe that through time, over the centuries, that every time humanity has glimpsed the infinite, unlimited nature of God, that the whole world has been blessed by that progress, that mental and spiritual progress. I'm inviting you tonight to expand your sense of the infinite. And I want to give you an example of a friend of mine in California who had an opportunity to do this. He was in third grade in America. I don't know if the grades are here in the UK. He was about 8 years old. He was diagnosed with a severe learning disability. The teacher was reluctant to put him forward any further. He couldn't read, he couldn't write, he didn't process information normally, couldn't retain information. Very limited picture for this young guy. He was put forward. He said he fumbled through school for a couple more years. And then his aunt one day took him to a Christian Science Sunday school. Jules mentioned the local Christian Science Sunday school. It's a dynamic learning environment where students explore the Bible for its practical application of ideas to their daily lives. And this is what he said. This is 1 hour in the Sunday school. This is what he glimpsed. He said, "I quickly grasped that God was spirit, mind, life, truth, love, soul, principle." It's a lot for a little guy to grasp. He's actually reiterating the synonyms that Mary Baker Eddy brings out in her writings for the nature of God, helping to open up a bigger sense of God. He says, "This was a God that I could understand. I got rid of the corporeal image that I'd had of God as a man in a big chair." A little guy trying to figure out the nature of God, but could relate to these ideas. The nature of God as love. The New Testament brings that out especially. The nature of God as spirit, as divine mind, the source of consciousness, intelligence. These concepts were expansive for this little guy. He was especially struck by the sense of God as mind, the source of his intelligence, that he had an unlimited reservoir of good ideas, intelligence that he could put into practice. And he began to attend the Sunday school regularly. He said he was able to get into a pretty good high school, and then he got into a good college, and then he got into law school. And in law school, of those that were admitted to the law school, he said only half of the class actually ended up graduating. It was that rigorous. And then when he took the bar exam, only 28% of the students who were there for that exam passed it. And he was one of that 28%. And he went on and is having a really full and successful career in law. All really stemming from this expansive view of God. I believe for all of us, that's really the source of healing, wholeness in our lives, is getting a fuller, grander sense of the divine in our everyday lives. And this really does relate to health, not just to overcoming, limitations intellectually, as this young guy did. A mother who's a friend of mine in Connecticut, her son was diagnosed by several experts as having a severe disease of the joints. Her husband was not a Christian Scientist, she was, and he really wanted him to be thoroughly checked out because he was very concerned about his son's well-being. He was progressively not being able to walk normally, lift up ordinary things, just do things that a seven-year-old should be able to do. And so a rigorous testing by several experts in Connecticut came back with the conclusion that he would, digress from this point forward in his life, that this was a very serious disease of the joints and that there was no cure. They said that when he stopped growing, when he was a mature adult, that they might be able to do some experimental surgery and give him some limited mobility at that time. But he'd have to wait, 15 years before they could do that. Well, the husband actually came back from the diagnosis and said, you're a Christian Scientist, get busy. Because we have no options here, and we really do need our son to have his freedom. The man, as I said, was not a Christian Scientist, was not particularly religious. Sometimes the public has a misconception that Christian Scientists are anti-medical. Absolutely not the case. Many people come into the practice of Christian Science, as I did, when other things don't pan out. Conventional treatment doesn't work out. And that's what happened for this little guy. The mother began to work and pray for him, as Christian Science teaches. And we'll talk more about this during the hour. But she said that she was beginning to feel in her prayers for her son a growing sense of confidence that he could actually find his freedom. And then one day, a woman showed up at her home and chewed her out, really criticized what she was doing. Why don't you have that boy in physical therapy? Why aren't you going to other people and trying to find out, you know, what can be done for him? And she tried to explain that they'd been to these experts, that there really was no hope within conventional medical treatment. But the woman was angry that she would even consider another kind of treatment for her son. After the woman left, she was kind of shaken up, and she went to her Bible. She said she just let it open at random, and her eyes fell on a passage in the New Testament: continue in that which thou hast been assured of, knowing of whom thou hast learned it. Continue. Continue on this course. You know, the early Christians were healers. Christian Science believes that that early practice of Christian healing is knowable, understandable, practical. And that's all she needed that night, was just this confidence to continue. And so she did, with her prayers and her work. Christian Scientists study a weekly Bible lesson. It's one of the many things that Mary Baker Eddy established to further humanity's understanding of the Bible. She felt the Bible was filled with practical and inspiring insights into the nature of healing. And so Bible lessons are just what Christian Scientists do. They study them during the week, and when you come together for the Sunday service, there's no pastor or preacher. There are two people who read this Bible lesson, and the congregation prays with it as it's being read. It's a very simple kind of service, really dedicated to opening up a fuller sense of God. In this Bible lesson, she recalled the story of Peter and John healing a man who'd never walked before at the gate of the temple. Probably some of you are familiar with that. I think it was the gate beautiful, is the way the book of Acts puts it. Silver and gold have I none, but such as I have, give I thee. In the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, rise up and walk. And the biblical account is that the man was leaping up, jumping, running, dancing into the temple. And she was struck as she read this account this time that you don't go from lame at birth, never having walked or used muscles or learned balance, to full mobility if that strength is dependent on the body. She saw that strength must be coming to this man directly from God. And so the body couldn't limit that strength or give it. It was coming to him directly from God. And that's what these two students of Jesus recognized, that strength came directly from God. God, the Bible brings out as spirit. The true strength, mobility, comes from spirit. Well, she just had this growing sense that her son's strength and mobility did not come from joints and muscles and bones, but actually came directly from God. And then the tipping point, this is what she describes. She'd opened up the Christian Science hymnal, and I don't know about you, but opening up a hymnal is oftentimes a way to feel spiritual ideas, more than just cogitate, you know, think about them rationally, but to feel through music, through poetry, a sense of God's presence and power. And she'd opened up to a little phrase in one of the hymnals that says, "Why is thy faith in God's great love so small?" That was the phrase that was looking at her. Why is thy faith in God's great love so small? And she realized that the illness had been so big in her thought, and her sense of God had been so small. And she flipped it. She said, it needs to be just the opposite. My sense of God needs to be infinite, unlimited. Why am I focused on this illness? I need to have my full focus on God, the nature of God. She said, after that moment and that prayer, that God was greater to her than the illness. and increasingly so. A sense of God was greater to her than this diagnosis. She was in the habit of dropping her son off at school. She had to drive him right to the front door, and people helped him get in and helped him get out. Drop him in the morning, pick him up in the afternoon. So she dropped him that day and went back and was working at home. At the end of the day, as she was getting ready to go pick him up, she heard footsteps running up the driveway. And he burst through the front door. "Mommy, I ran all the way home. Totally free. Totally fluid. This illness was no part of that young boy anymore. It was not there. No evidence of that illness." Well, she said that he went on to live a absolutely normal life. He's a dad today with young kids of his own, very athletic, and was in school growing up. How does that happen? How do you go from, you know, a diagnosis that's been absolutely scientifically tested out and you can see the evidence of it, and one moment you're helping your child, you know, get into school, and the next hours later, he's running up the driveway. How does that happen? That kind of healing doesn't fit our typical paradigm, does it? Doesn't fit a medical model of healing. And for that reason, when healings like this occur, and there have been tens of thousands of well-documented firsthand experiences of spiritual healing in Christian Science over the last century, when those healings occur, they're often dismissed as spontaneous remission. I don't know if that's the term they use in Britain, but spontaneous remission is what doctors will often say in the United States. The body just, for one reason or another, got well. There's a professor of medicine at Harvard, Dr. Jeffrey Rediger, and he studied 100 cases of healing experiences that people have had, like this one, where a diagnosis has been given, thorough tests have been done. In many of the cases he's studied, the cases were pronounced terminal, and people have recovered. And he studied why and how. He doesn't believe that it's good science to just dismiss them. He hates the term spontaneous remission. He says that's just an excuse for studying what we should be studying. And he especially doesn't like the term miraculous healing. He doesn't believe these are miracles. In an article in the Washington Post, Dr. Rediger said that, "I believe what we call miracles actually are consistent with mental and spiritual laws that we are only beginning to study." So what we call miracles consistent with these mental and spiritual laws. I sent him a copy of Mary Baker Eddy's definition of miracle. This is her major work, Science and Health. A lot of people enjoy this in the glossary. Mary Baker Eddy, 150 years ago, was writing that a miracle is that which is divinely natural but must be learned humanly. So a miracle isn't setting aside laws, but actually fulfilling them. It's the expression of a deeper kind of law, a divine law, a spiritual law. For this reason, Mary Baker Eddy didn't believe that Jesus was a miracle healer, that his healing was mystical or he had supernatural powers. I mean, even the religious community will, in a way, dismiss Christian healing as the result of miraculous powers or supernatural powers that Jesus and the early disciples had. Well, Mary Baker Eddy called Jesus, in her book, the most scientific man that ever trod the globe. She writes that he plunged beneath the material surface of things and found the spiritual cause. He went deeper. I love that statement. It sounds a lot like Einstein to me. I mean, it's a 21st century concept that we're looking beneath the surface of things, that maybe what we're seeing is being so solid and physical and organic, actually there's something deeper going on. I think physicists would agree to some extent with that sense of the surface of things. They would look at the energy that's involved and the subatomic and all the, you know, the unseen things. Well, is it possible the Bible was talking about those things centuries ago, the unseen you know, the invisible, Paul describing that faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Is it possible that that unseen is substantial, the spiritual? Well, Mary Baker Eddy believed it was. She loved Jesus' teaching in the Bible, and this is the basis of tonight's sharing, that with God all things are possible. It's from Matthew 19. Jesus says, with men this is impossible, but with God all things are possible. Can you think of somebody who had a more expansive sense of possibility ever in the history of humanity? Where did that sense of possibility come from? You know, over Christmas time, I was rereading the Gospels straight through on a very rapid pace, and I was tabbing every example of spiritual healing in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. I was looking at Jesus' healing practice from beginning to end through the Gospels and just enjoying going through this record. I read many of these experiences all my life, but I thought, I just want to get into this again and see them through in a very fluid way. I was struck this time through by a little word that's often associated with Jesus' healing practice, and that's the word immediately. Just in Matthew 8, 9, and 10, let me read a couple of examples. A leper came to him, worshiping him, and saying, Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean. Jesus put out his hand and touched him, saying, I am willing, be cleansed. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. A little further down, he came into Peter's house and he saw his wife's mother lying sick with a fever. He touched her hand and immediately the fever left her. He heals two violently insane men instantaneously. He forgives and heals a paralytic. A little girl who has died is restored to life, and a woman who's hemorrhaging for 12 years, who spent everything she has on physicians, is instantaneously healed. And then he asks his disciples to go out and continue this practice. The works that I do, you will do also. He took students for 3 years. Why do you spend 3 years with people unless you're trying to impart something to them and have them carry on that practice? He said to them, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So the disciples clearly were learning something. They were learning the truth. In Mary Baker Eddy's study of the Bible and the New Testament, there are some themes that come out in her writings. You know, what was it that Jesus was understanding about the nature of life, about the nature of God, that enabled him to heal instantaneously? Well, one of the beautiful themes in her writings, is that Jesus healed from the standpoint of perfection. That sense, as he taught, be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. So he wasn't fixing broken bodies, but his enlightened view of others was revealing the wholeness that God had made. Healing as revealing, healing as bringing out what's present now. How else can you explain immediately? And how does immediately happen? How does immediately change a body that's suffering, covered with leprosy, from one moment that to the next moment clean? Unless that healing is mental and spiritual in nature. Jesus' enlightened view is replacing, transforming thought, and bringing about a sense of the wholeness that's always there. Jesus taught that God is spirit. Mary Baker Eddy loved that enlightened view that God is spirit. He said, that which is born of the flesh is flesh, but that which is born of the spirit, is eternal, is permanent, is present, always. You have a choice. How do you want to see yourself? Physical or spiritual? He taught that a good tree produces good fruit. Like produces like. What is God like? Mary Baker Eddy spent a great deal of her time exploring, what is God like? She said the most important thing in the world is to know what God is. And in her research into the Bible, she discovered the nature of God is fundamentally spiritual, spirit. And God creates each of us spiritually in his own image and likeness. Well, what about this stuff we're dealing with? What about the problems, the limitations, the illness? Where do those come from? To me, this is the genius of Mary Baker Eddy, is to confront this dark side. Sometimes people have the impression that Christian Scientists are the God is love people. They're the ones that just kind of look starry-eyed, like everything is just fine, you know, while all hell's breaking out in the world. That's actually not at all her experience. This is a woman who, for 44 years, was chronically ill, who lived through the Civil War, who saw close family members die prematurely. She was no lightweight when it came to tragedy and suffering. She knew what that was all about. But she discovered in Jesus' healing practice that he never identified evil or disease as having its source in a loving God. That he had taught and illustrated that God is love. And so this other that we're confronting in our lives, that he had to confront as a healer, he defined as a lie, a misconception, a limited view. And that's why at the very beginning here I asked you, have you ever overcome a limitation? Have you ever seen through a limited perspective of yourself? Jesus was doing this for people all the time. He was helping expand their sense of life and God and health from a very limited self-based view to an unlimited God-based view, from the finite to the infinite. And there's something in her writings that inspired really a core theme in what I'm sharing with you tonight, that I caught a glimpse as I was reading this one day that it was and is the source of our sense of possibility. Can you think of what Jesus did that absolutely blew open humanity's sense of the infinite? I'm seeing a few heads nodding, a few smiles. The resurrection, right? I mean, confronting death, the end, the ultimate, you know, limit that we are all faced with, that sense of mortality. This is what she writes in the second chapter of her book, which is all dedicated to Jesus' life work and the meaning of his sacrifice on the cross. She says that his resurrection was also their resurrection, speaking of the disciples. It helped them to raise themselves and others from spiritual dullness and blind belief in God into the perception of infinite possibilities. Isn't that a great phrase? From spiritual dullness and blind belief in God into the perception of infinite possibilities. Why did the resurrection have such a transforming effect on those students? You think about it. I mean, imagine being taught by this man of tremendous love and spirituality, being taken under wing, having seen the kind of healing works that he was doing, believing that he was the Messiah, the Anointed One, and then watching him brutally executed on the cross. And that's the end. And you're left wondering, did we get something wrong? Was this the man we thought he was? You know, does evil have more power than good? And a few days later, there he is, coming to you in all your fear, huddled up inside a small room in Jerusalem, and saying, peace. And showing you the evidence of what he's been through, but saying it's had no effect on me. Life is immortal, unlimited, infinite, eternal. Would that have a little effect on you, do you think? Would that open up the windows of your thought to see life in a larger context? Well, it did for those disciples. They became tremendous healers after that experience and after Jesus' ascension. If you can imagine in your own life a sense of mortality, limitation, a sense of age just being brushed aside as you glimpse eternal life. Life is God. You are the expression of life as God. Well, it had a tremendous effect on those students. And, you know, there's proof historically that spiritual healing went on consistently in the early Christian community for at least a couple of hundred years. And then it quietly disappeared. Why? Why do you think it just quietly went by the wayside? Well, I have a theory. Because humanity's always trying to bring the infinite down into the finite. They're trying to reduce the infinite God into human doctrines and limited concepts. And over time, those human doctrines, church organization, whatever you want to call it, just scrunched this sense of the infinite down into a very limited view. And even personalized Jesus' healing work. Instead of healing being seen as based on the truth he taught, it was based on the person. And when that person wasn't here, and the person of the disciples and their students was no longer here, healing can't happen. Well, Mary Baker Eddy, you know, her life was all about this discovery of a principle of healing. And when she writes about resurrection in her life, the way she does in that second chapter, she's writing about her own, too. You know, what I love about her book, Science and Health, with Key to the Scriptures, as the book developed, she added a whole section called Key to the Scriptures, a book meant to open up the Bible's healing promises and the science of healing. But she had experienced a near-death experience. She'd been, you know, on what some felt was her deathbed, following a serious accident. But she was chronically ill for many years. So I look at this experience when she's 44 years old and think, if I were in her shoes, I probably would have just closed my eyes and said, enough of this experience. But instead of doing that, she this very low moment in her life, she opened up her Bible. And it's beautiful to look at the historic accounts, which I've studied at the Mary Baker Eddy Library in Boston, the affidavits that were later given by people that witnessed this experience, the minister, the young boy that went to fetch the doctor in a horse and wagon on a cold night, the woman who made food for her. I mean, people experienced something that night. Mary Baker Eddy was one moment in a terrible state of suffering. The doctor had given her morphine to just try and dull the pain. He had diagnosed serious internal injuries. The local paper had published an account of them. But a few days later, Mary Baker Eddy had opened her Bible, and in the very first edition of her book, the way she describes it in straightforward terms is, the limbs, which were cold and immovable, warmed. The internal agony ceased, and I rose upon my feet well. She went into the next room, and there was an elderly woman there who was wondering why she's on her feet, and she said to her, "What have you has Christ come again upon earth? How is it that you're restored to us?" And her response was, "Christ never left. Christ is truth, and truth is always here. The impersonal Savior." A radical thing to think, say, feel. She had glimpsed the truth Jesus taught. She'd been reading an account, she later talked about, of a man being healed of paralysis. She'd lost feeling in the lower part of her body. It had been a spinal injury and an injury to her head. And she'd regained her strength. She had felt the presence of a truth about herself that had instantaneously given her strength. She had more work to do because the doctor later returned, saw her on her feet, and said, "What are you doing on your feet?" And she collapsed. She said she could feel that doctor's skepticism. And he said, "Hey, if you've done that before, you can do it again. I'm going to leave." And he did. And she returned to her Bible, and she regained this sense that she'd had earlier. Well, she didn't want to call this a miracle. She called it a falling apple in her autobiography. A law of God that she'd glimpsed, like Newton. He'd glimpsed an unseen law at work. And Mary Baker Eddy would dedicate the rest of her life to understanding that law. She would ultimately call it the science of Christianity. There are themes in this science that we've touched on a little bit, but in those early years, as Mary Baker Eddy was starting to really gain a clear view of how Jesus healed, I think one way to look at this is just by opening up the book of Genesis. She wrote over 600 pages, handwritten, during this time in her life. How else would you do it? They didn't have computers or typewriters. But handwritten notes on the book of Genesis, where it's clarifying in her thought that Genesis 1 is the account of creation that Jesus understood and based his practice on. You know, perfect God and perfect man, a God of absolute good, beholding everything as good, creating everything as good, and blessing all of creation. And then the opposite perspective, Genesis 2 and 3, where everything is made of dust, of what is temporary. And, you know, these children tragically listen to a talking snake who convinces them that they need the knowledge of good and evil, and thus the fall of humanity. Theologically, that's the way humanity understands our fall from grace, tracing back to that. Mary Baker Eddy saw that fall from grace as an allegory that helps us understand the limited misconceptions of the human mind that present a view that is the very opposite of what God has actually made. And it's the mind of Christ, or the understanding Jesus had, that lifts us out of that limited view and shows us who we actually are as God's spiritual, flawless children. Now, she wasn't a theorist. Mary Baker Eddy was pragmatic. She'd grown up in the Puritan tradition in America, and that meant you had to make things practical in your everyday life. The local reading room carries a biography that I always recommend to people who want to learn more about Mary Baker Eddy's practice of healing. It's called Mary Baker Eddy, Christian Healer. And it includes so many beautiful, thorough, corroborated accounts of her healing work in the 19th century. There's no question in my mind, looking at Mary Baker Eddy's transformation, not only the healing of the effects of that accident, but going forward, she was never again chronically ill. She was empowered with a sense of her wholeness and strength and a sense of possibility. Her life in the 19th century, from farmer's daughter and invalid to a woman of great stature in the United States, founding her own religion and healing, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people. Many of these accounts are in this book. One of them that I'm going to read to you is significant because it shows you where her thought as a healer is, the sense of possibility. It says here that an engineer came to her whose eye had been put out by a hot cinder. Mrs. Eddy gave him a treatment, that is a very specific form of prayer that she was teaching at that time, and an eye was manifested, but it was smaller than the other and deficient. She looked at it and said, "Is it possible that my understanding of God is as little as that?" Again, she treated him, and the eye was perfect. I love that. Is it possible that my understanding of God is as little as that? Her sense of God was increasingly infinite. In her writings, you'll find a little theme, the allness of God, the infinite nature of good. She takes us back to pure monotheism, what the Bible prophets, you know, talked about. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one, without an opposite. That's radical. That perception of an infinite good and loving God, a God of infinite spirit, that was the basis of her healing practice. And her ability to look through the misconception, to never buy the picture, the outward view, to look deeper than the physicality of anybody that she was treating. She also had a tremendous fearlessness in the face of death. She'd faced that. She'd experienced this rolling away of a stone in her life. And this is an experience that she writes about, sitting by the bedside of a man dying of cancer. And this is what she writes. She says, "When I have most clearly seen and most sensibly felt that the infinite recognizes no disease, this has not separated me from God, but has so bound me to him as to enable me instantaneously to heal a cancer which had eaten its way to the jugular vein." That's a fairly graphic description. But what I'm left with there is her sense of the infinite, that the infinite God recognizes no such thing as disease. These are revolutionary ideas. To me, they're restoring revolutionary ideas that are inherent in the scriptures. She's not inventing, she's recovering. She's discovering what's always been there in the Bible to understand. It was a doctor who urged her to write a book about her ideas. She'd been telegrammed by a family to come and help a woman who was dying of pneumonia. And Dr. Davis of Manchester, New Hampshire, witnessed her healing this woman who was gasping her last breaths from this illness. One moment, she's near death, and the next moment, with Mary Baker Eddy's help, she was restored. And the doctor said, "What did you do? How did you do that?" She said, "It was God." He said, "You need to write it in a book and give it to the world." And that was part of the prompting that she felt as a healer at that time, to sit down and write about everything she was learning through her healing practice. That book became Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, a book that she started in 1872, published in 1875, and finished her last edits the year that she died in 1910. It's a book that really has a 40-year history, an evolution. You can tell the care she took in writing down what she was learning in her own practice, in her own teaching. I encourage people to, read this book together with a biography, and you'll find that the book itself is autobiographical. You can find in the chapters of her book the footsteps of the author and her growing sense of how healing worked in biblical times and how these principles can be applied today. She left the last chapter of her book to her readers, and I encourage people who are picking this book up for the first time to start with the last chapter, because you can find in this chapter beautiful evidence of dramatic and radical healing in people's lives. And for many of those who are writing these letters, they did not expect to be healed as they began the book. They were reading because they were spiritually hungry, and oftentimes they had been given up by the medical faculty, and they were looking for something, they were grasping for something. But their growing sense of God is what brought about transformation in their lives. Just a quick example. This man writes that, "As the son of a physician, a graduate in pharmacy, and an ex-druggist, I had a perfect contempt for what I thought Christian Science to be. About 6.5 years ago, however, having exhausted all material means at my command, conventional medicine, electricity, gymnastics, cycling, and so on, and being in a hopeless state, the study of Christian Science was taken up. I had been a sufferer from catarrh and sore throat for over 30 years, and in the last 5 were added several others, including dyspepsia, bronchitis, and a loss in flesh of 60 pounds. While most grateful for the physical healing I gained while reading this book, my gratitude for the mental and spiritual regeneration is beyond expression. When I learned that Jesus' mission of healing sickness as well as sin did not end with his short stay upon earth, but is practical in all ages, my joy was unbounded." I like the fact that he was a critic. He was skeptical, but the effects of gaining a fuller sense of God, a reasonable, logical sense of God. So many Christian Scientists, and I know there are plenty of you here tonight, who've practiced Christian Science effectively in your lives. It's not uncommon to find Christian Scientists who've lived their whole lives without a drop of medicine, without a visit to the doctor. This practice of metaphysical healing is effective. But we do live in a skeptical world, let's face it. And part of the reason I give talks about Christian Science is because there's so much skepticism out there and so many misconceptions about what Christian Science is. As you read through Mary Baker Eddy's book, I invite people to find the theme, the thread of possibility in it. In the first chapter of her book, a chapter called Prayer, How We Communicate With and Commune With God, First chapter, first sentence, first paragraph, she says that the prayer that reforms the sinner and heals the sick is an absolute faith that all things are possible to God. But she goes on, a spiritual understanding of him, an unselfed love. All those ingredients are important to effective healing. It's not just faith in the typical sense of kind of, you know, an unreasoned or enthusiastic belief in God, but an absolute faith or a conviction based on understanding what God is, that all things are possible. And I love that last point, an unselfed love. Why did Jesus spend so much time urging people to love one another? Because it's love that actually transforms thought almost more than anything else. I found in my own life, the effort I make to love an enemy, to love someone or something that seems unlovable, can only happen through my spiritual growth, can only happen as I give up selfishness, self-will, anger, you know, all those sort of human mortal traits of thought, as I adopt the mind of Christ. With that spiritual consciousness that Jesus has, we begin to love the unlovable. We begin to see through the mask people are wearing to the child of God that's there. And that promotes healing. But she also says this about possibility. She says, Scripture informs us that with God all things are possible. All good is possible to spirit, but our prevalent theories practically deny this and make healing possible only through matter. We live in a world where, let's face it, medicine is God for many people. The physical sciences are it. God is dead or distant for many people. Atheism is on the rise. People are disillusioned. All things are possible to God, but people's sense of God is kind of, you know, based on, I believe, doctrines that are tired and worn out, and humanity's ready for a more expansive sense of the divine nature. That's what Mary Baker Eddy felt the science of Christianity was here to offer, was a view of God that's truly logical and inspired and practical. I remember as a kid that I was sitting in a doctor's office. I'd grown up with doctors. My dad's best friend was a doctor. And so I was familiar with Dr. Weston and visits to him when things went wrong. And I can remember a visit for a serious case of strep throat one winter. And penicillin was prescribed. And, you know, you stay off your feet, Chet. I was a basketball player. You know, just be in bed. Don't try and go and, you know, get on the basketball court with this. And I remember the process of weeks that it took for that strep throat to heal. My mother had begun the practice of Christian Science. She was a spiritual seeker. She'd found Mary Baker Eddy's writings. And her good friend was a Christian Science practitioner. So when this issue came up for me the following winter, I got on the phone to this Christian Science practitioner. Some people wonder, what do they do? You know, how do they diagnose? How do they treat you? I found out it was the most natural thing in the world. It was a simple conversation. And it wasn't a conversation about my body. It wasn't a conversation about the symptoms. It was a conversation about God's love. And I remember this woman being very perceptive about the unsettled nature of my home, because my parents had gone through a divorce. And I was kind of getting traded back and forth between the two parents. And as a kid, that's unsettling. And, you know, was also going through tough times at school. But I remember her assuring me of the changeless nature of God as love. I was in that love. I was one with that love. And that love was the only power and the only presence. And by the time I hung up the phone from talking with this woman, about 10 minutes, I remember the sensation of fear and a sense of coldness and pain just draining from my body. With that change of thought came this absolute change to every symptom that I was suffering from. I went to bed peacefully. I got up the next morning. I was entirely well. This wasn't a process of weeks. It didn't involve antibiotics. It involved a transformation of thought and a deeper understanding of God as love. Jules mentioned in the introduction that this experience I had with a back condition, another diagnosis, I'd been in a sledding accident, gone underneath a car actually and injured my spine, and I can remember the doctor looking at the, showing me the x-rays of the injury, and then while we were there, he said to me, "Chet, you have a back exactly like your dad's, and you're going to suffer from problems the way he has all your life." That's something to hear. That's a box not to be put in. Sometimes a diagnosis can be like a box that wants to absolutely limit your sense of health and healing. And I can remember, you know, walking out of that office thinking, okay, he's the one with the white jacket and all the degrees. I guess I'm going to have to go along with this. And we started regular visits to the chiropractor for over 2 years. And every week, practically, he would try and relieve the pressure on a nerve that was causing a great deal of pain. And, you know, it would provide temporary relief, and then I would, suffer from more problems, and he'd try and make adjustments and so forth. Well, again, I finally decided to talk with this Christian Science practitioner. It took me a little longer this time. And I worked with this practitioner over the course of 2 weeks. She helped me understand structure. My structure is not fundamentally physical or based on vertebrae or muscles or nerves, but my structure was spiritual. God was upholding me. The Bible says God has made man upright. And I began to think about that upright nature of who I was, that God was upholding me. It was a beautiful, profound realization. And I have never suffered from back problems from that time to this. It was the most natural kind of healing in the world. And these are not random experiences I'm sharing with you. This is the practice of Christian Science that, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Christian scientists over the century have experienced. But we are in a skeptical world. And oftentimes that skepticism can be pretty hard, even for Christian scientists. Sometimes we feel unscientific for practicing spiritual healing in a scientific world. But my conviction is that the science that Jesus taught is still ahead of its time. We're still catching up with ideas of health and healing that he practiced 2,000 years ago. And this is what Mary Baker Eddy is sharing with the world through her writings and through the practice of Christian Science. We're just about at the hour. I wondered if before I wrap up here, there are any questions that you would like to raise with me for a moment. Take a few minutes here. What are you thinking about in relationship to healing in your own lives? Or, you know, do you want to ask me a few questions before we wrap up? Yeah, Jules, do you have the mic?
I was wondering, you know, she talks about, we would call it raising the dead, but she would probably see it as something else.
Yeah.
The truth being exhibited, I guess. She healed one of her own assistants or servants who actually complained that he wanted to stay where he was, but she said, "No, you're coming back because I need to finish things to work on." Yeah. But I think she had a few experiences of bringing life back into what ostensibly looked like a dead body.
Right.
Do you know if anybody else in Christian Science has done that since she died?
What an easy question, raising the dead. Okay. I have learned about some really interesting experiences lecturing over the last several years. And one was a mother in Portland, Maine, whose adopted son had decided to kill himself. And it was a suicide, and she was called by the police. She was told to come to the hospital, that he'd been found dead and this is what he'd done to himself. And she showed up at the hospital. And he was pronounced dead. She got there, I think, 15 or 20 minutes later. And the sheet was up over him, and they just wanted her to identify the body. But she went in, and she was very angry. I mean, she was angry because she had devoted so much love to this young man, and somehow he wasn't understanding how loved he was. And she said she just went in there and told him he had no business dying, and that she talked to him about her love and the family's love for him. And he resuscitated. That's a pretty well-known case in Portland, Maine. I mean, the school district and people that witnessed it. Not just Christian Scientists. There was a case that was medically called a miracle in St. Louis a few winters ago, a boy who fell through the ice and was dead for 20, 25 minutes. He drowned. And then the emergency people came, pulled him up, took him to the hospital. They heroically tried to resuscitate him. Nothing happened. His mother showed up. She was very religious, and she began to pray at his bedside. And he revived. The doctors, this is very well documented, noted 25 or 30 minutes, absolutely dead, and said he will have severe brain problems as a result of this without oxygen for so long. And none of that came to pass. Absolutely normal. So again, Dr. Rediger at Harvard, I believe that what we call miracles actually are consistent with mental and spiritual laws that we're only beginning to study. I don't think that the medical profession is taking these kinds of experiences seriously enough. Some are, like Dr. Rediger. But there have been other cases, and maybe some people here, we can talk after the talk tonight, if others are aware of these kinds of experiences. But those are a couple I know of. Yeah.
Yeah. Where is the idea of the will of God coming to this? I guess God wills only perfect happiness for his children.
Well, that's the thing. There's a traditional teaching that we sometimes, bow our heads and say it must have been the will of God for a young baby to die, or for because how else can you explain it? But that's not a very good explanation. I actually think that's the reason a lot of people are turning away from religion. My farmer neighbor in central New York absolutely rejected religion as a young man because he was told at a funeral for a young child that it was the will of God that child had died, and he absolutely rejected religion. He came back into it much later through a loving pastor's assurance that that was not God's will that child die. So I think that's oftentimes a phrase that's used to explain the unexplainable. And I think if you look at the practice of Jesus' healing practice, he never said that. He never gave up on a case, even if somebody had been lost, if they were dead. I mean, Lazarus, 4 days in the tomb, he didn't say, this is the will of God. He healed him. And he called death an enemy. And so death would never be a gateway or a pathway to life. Jesus didn't teach that. So I think that that's a theological mistake. Yes?
Yes.
Can I ask about... Will you use the microphone so we can hear?
Well,
yes. Yeah. Thanks.
Diabetics, how do you take insulin?
Yes. Yes. Christian Scientists are always doing their very best to practice spiritual healing. And tremendously sincere in their practice. There are times when Christian Scientists, are feeling the effect, I think, the strong effect of medical thought. And that is one example of, a very strong view that's essential. And while Christian Scientists are working this out, they may be taking insulin. They may be, this is where they are right now. There have been well-documented cases of healing of diabetes and people who have found their freedom from that use. But it's never this is where I would use the word will. It's not a willful thing. You're not willing yourself away from a drug or something that is right now perhaps seeming to be useful in your life, but you are growing in your understanding and your sense of God's care and love. And so You know, it needs to be done with a great deal of humility and courage at the same time. But, you know, again, I raised this this point about the practical theories denying. Mary Baker Eddy has a whole chapter in her book called Some Objections Answered. And I believe that's one of the most overlooked chapters in her book. She wrote that because she was very aware of the criticisms and the, you know, the hatred expressed towards spiritual healing, and that this, these misconceptions, these very, you know, serious views needed to be addressed. They needed to be responded to. We need to respond to these things in our prayers. You know, Jesus, he dealt with hatred. He dealt with animosity. He dealt with the tough stuff. You know, many of his healings, he talks about casting out devils. Well, you know, what did devils look like at the time? I mean, I think people shouting at him. He was nuts. He was crazy. What are you doing here? I hate you. I mean, coming out of people's mouths, they called them devils. They were angry, angry people that were upset with his approach to spiritual healing. So I think we do have to deal with these, you know, kinds of thought in order to find healing oftentimes. Yeah. Yes? Can we pass that mic down? Yeah.
First thing is, where does that quote from continue in the sense of the Bible? Continue?
Continue in that which thou hast learned and been assured of, knowing of whom thou hast learned it. Is that Timothy? That's King James I'm quoting. She was, continue in that which thou hast learned and hast been assured of, knowing of whom thou hast learned it. Yeah.
The other thing is that I've seen so much suffering of people.
Yes.
You know, and I just feel, and I've mentioned it in Christian Science, saying there's another way. I've sent them Mary Baker Eddy's book.
Yes.
I've sent them Healing Spiritually.
Yes.
And I have to say, with the people I've mentioned it to, even though they're suffering horrendously,
yeah.
I suppose we shouldn't see a suffering mortal, but mm-hmm. I see, you know, I try and feel so much compassion, but not one of them has shown any slightest
Yes.
including my own family,
who
told me, you know, who just rejected it totally.
Right.
I suppose the only way I can show something is the way I live my own life.
Right. But, yes. Yeah, I think that's right. Mrs. Eddy in her book writes that the our systems of religion are governed in general by our systems of medicine, and it's, you know, we live in a time where to really practice spiritual healing, to think that one could practice it exclusively, riles people up. You know, people are so invested in medicine, so invested in various therapies, that to consider stepping away from that is considered kooky. You know, if Christian Science didn't have such a long track record of effective spiritual healing, if I hadn't experienced it in my own life and didn't experience it on a regular basis with my practice, you know, what would I be doing up here? How could I speak about this science unless there were proof? But we are living in a world that is very convinced that physicality and materiality are everything, and God is distant at best. You know, so I think we have to to see. I guess I would just say that the stone rolling away, I love that image of the stone rolling away that we see in the story of the resurrection. I do believe that's the Christ. This is not a historic event. When I'm talking about that stone rolling away, the Christ is that communication from God to everyone, everywhere, rolling away materialism, a heavy, limited sense of life, and opening the door One of my favorite healings in the Bible, you know, happened after Jesus was gone. It was Saul, who was out there, you know, railing on the early Christian community, putting people in prison, you know, witnessing Stephen's death, stoning, you know, witnessed there as he was stoned. But the fact that the Christ, this eternal presence, you know, could break in on that hatred and open his eyes. He was made blind first, and then open his eyes to what Christianity truly was. I think it's the same Christ that's at work today. You know, opening thought, expanding thought. So it's not just our personal effort. I guess what I'm saying here, it's not just your personal effort, but maybe stepping back and feeling more of a sense of the Christ at work, acknowledging that it's always at work in human consciousness. And don't be too impressed with Saul, you know, but know that there is a Paul there ready to be awakened. Yeah. Well, I think we'll wrap up. I will be glad to talk with you individually tonight. I just want to end with a few thoughts here to kind of conclude what we've been sharing. I'd like to invite you to, if you aren't familiar with Mary Baker Eddy's book, to afterwards go to the table and pick up a copy, and particularly take note of a little chapter right in the middle called Creation. If you are familiar with this book and you already have read it through, reread the chapter on creation. It is a beautiful summary of everything we've been talking about tonight, because the theme in this chapter is the finite giving place to the infinite. And it is a beautiful, progressive understanding. She writes here that the finite must yield to the infinite. The everlasting I am is not bounded nor compressed within the narrow limits of physical humanity. And then she says that we must gain a proper sense of the infinite in order to experience healing in our lives. A proper sense. That phrase has really stuck with me. Do we have a proper sense of the infinite? Or are we trying to reduce God down, you know, to our aches and pains and to our personal problems, instead of opening our thought to that infinite sense of God that Jesus had every day? With God, all things are possible. And that is truly the theme of Mary Baker Eddy's writings. With God, all things are possible. I believe that's at the core of so much healing today, is gaining a proper sense of the infinite. And I'll just leave you with a little quote that I believe covers lots of that's going on in the world today, particularly conflict in the world, a statement about this theme. Mary Baker Eddy writes in a short work called The People's Idea of God. She writes that proportionately as the people's belief of God in every age has been dematerialized and unfinited, has their deity become good, no longer a personal tyrant or a molten image, but the divine life, truth, and love, life without beginning or ending, truth without a lapse or error, and love, universal, infinite, eternal. Go away with that word, unfinited. Go unfinite your thinking and your lives, and you will find tremendous healing. Thank you so much for coming tonight.